Hello and welcome to Animation Giveaways. This is Sleep Deprived Foley and Mercutio's a little bitch. Here are my friends.
Hi, I'm Zeb Berryman, the dashing dishwasher.
Hi, I'm Lydia Lewis, and I should be just as sleep deprived as Coley, but somehow I'm not.
I'm Liz, the bodacious badass. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm so glad to see you all.
All right,
Oh yeah, I'm they, them.
Right, anyways, this is a mess. Let's get on to the next segment.
Can I comment on how awesome the bodacious badass sounds? Because I dig it.
Thank you. Tips anymore, but you know what? Better than customer service, the badass business.
Yeah. Anyways, what anime or manga or podcast have people been watching or listening to?
I've been listening to Behind the Bastards, as everyone is aware every time I vaguely reference it.
Yep.
Also, I've been watching Toradora.
Oh,
that's really cute.
It is.
Yeah. So I have been watching, and it's not an anime, but I've been watching Invincible. It's really good. As my friends know, I've been reading Homestuck, which, when I told my aunt and uncle, they were like, "Why are you doing this?"
That is what literally everybody who you've introduced the fact that you're doing this has said.
Including me.
Including me as
Homestuck.
Well.
Like, I love Homestuck still. Admittedly, I haven't seen Homestuck 2. So.
Apparently it's bad.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
So, I have been watching a couple of anime. I've been watching SSSS.DioZenon, which is a sequel to the SSSS Gridman. It's like a fairly angsty and moody super robot anime. It's really good. Good animation, good fight scenes, killer theme song. And it has possibly the best name for a villain organization in an anime, which is the Kaiju Eugenicists.
What?
Yeah, they are eugenicists who are into kaiju.
So, Zeb, do you know what the SSSS in both those titles mean?
No.
Superhuman Samurai Cyber Squad.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because originally Gridman was going to be called Superhuman Samurai Cyber Squad Gridman because of the fucking American adaptation of the original Gridman.
Right. I've also been watching a bit of The Saint's Power is Omnipotent, which is like, I don't usually like isekai, but this one's like the exception. It's like if the lady from Read or Die got isekai'd and became like a ridiculously good herbalist. Like ridiculously good, like she invents spices for food and it makes everybody super powerful. And she also puts some herbs to like get rid of the bags under her eyes and accidentally makes it so she doesn't need glasses anymore. It's really funny. And I've been watching Joron, Princess of Ice and Snow, which is an anime that is like that Elizabeth is also watching. I think she's further ahead of it on it than me. It's like this kind of adaptation of Lady Snowblood. It's got really good animation and some like really fascinatingly fucked up characters. But it's also like a little bit confusing and strange in various ways. But I've been enjoying it overall.
Nice. Same. I am a little further ahead, like Zeb has said. I really enjoy it. I would say at times borderline surreal.
Yeah.
In abstract on purpose. So I'm very excited to where it goes. There's a certain character. They may be queer. I'm not quite sure. I think they might be, like, one character is purposely misgendering them and mocking them for their gender at some point. So if that is triggering, I would avoid it for now. Later on, when I do finish the series, I will like let people know, just because I don't want to. I, you know, if you're like, oh, you're a little iffy on that, just to give you a heads up.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, that's what I'm watching.
Oh, I've also been watching Love, Death, Robots.
Oh, I've heard that's good.
It is good. It's sort of like an anthology thing with a whole bunch of different like animated shorts. But some of them are pretty rough. They're all super cool.
I mean, it's one of those animes that's like partially designed to make the audience cry, isn't it?
Is it an anime?
It might be an anime or it might not be. Let me see where it was made.
So each of the different shorts, like, have different art styles. And some of it's, like, CG animation. Some of it's hand-drawn animation. Some of it's... It's all different.
Oh, no, it isn't. It's not anime. But it is, I think, still designed to make people cry.
Yeah, some of them are.
Yeah, so if y'all were able to hear it, you may also have heard a purring. That's because one of my dad's cats, Semi, is joining me, and he has told me that if the people in Romeo and Juliet were cats instead of two men, no one would have died.
Bullshit.
Then the author says, two men are little bitches and are dumb.
I'll agree with that. But people still would have died if they were all cats.
But for me, what I've been watching Princess Stoneblood, like Zeb has. I've also been watching, which is a anime. It's a really realistic yaoi. It's actually written really well. It avoids a lot of the problematic tropes or pitfalls of the yaoi genre. It's almost a slice of life, learning about how to play guitar and music and all that. It's about.
What do you say its name was?
Gibbon.
Oh, Gibbon, okay.
It's really cool. I really like it. There's one point where, like, one of the main characters is like, what's an amp? And I'm like, I hate you. Stop.
That hurts my soul.
I'm like, how do you not know what an amp is? You can just go, oh, I know what they're supposed to do. I just don't, like, is there anything else they do? Or, like, does it depend which one you use? How do you use it? Like, just to have a character go, I don't know what an amp is in 21st century Japan. Like, no, stop. What are you doing? Get some help. How do you not know what an amp is? That is just my one critique.
This almost makes me want to play guitar just talking about this. Like, so, I have a guitar and I know how to play it.
I've also been listening to the Teen Creeps podcast. They review 80s and 90s YA pulp fiction, which is really great. I really love the host. You know, I haven't really listened to a lot of podcasts, and I found theirs on one day, and I really got back into podcasts. And for reading, I've been reading the manga Love of Kill. A cold and calculating bounty hunter becomes the object of interest for a crazy hitman. And they play a game of cat and mouse. It's really good, really well written. I've been reading it since before it officially got licensed in English, and I bought the first manga, and I love it.
That sounds really good.
And I've also been reading Blackwater Sister. It's an American prose novel. It's about a young woman who moves back to Malaysia with her parents and is being haunted by the ghost of her grandmother she didn't really know, who's threatening to out her to her parents if she doesn't help her resolve some things that she left unfinished in her life.
Interesting.
Very wild. Very good. Very well written.
Not a thing I've been like watching, reading, listening to, but I've been trying to like get back to writing.
Yeah, I have too.
Anxiety is a pain.
I've also been reading Usagi Yojimbo, which all my friends should probably be going, of course you are. You love Usagi Yojimbo. Which,
yeah,
if y'all don't know,
shut up about it.
Yes, I never shut up about it. If I did another podcast, it would be me trying to rope someone into reading all of Usagi Yojimbo.
I'd be interested in that.
Give me the comics for free and I'll do it.
Alright, I will hold you up to that, Zeb.
I'm also making the same offer.
All right.
Well, okay. Okay, apparently we're creating a podcast network now.
I kind of feel like that was always inevitable.
What's our podcast network name?
I don't know. I feel like all the good names have been taken.
No. Our podcast network name, Space Bitches on Earth.
I was just going to say all our pets' names, like a combination, like...
You know, that's fair.
But I do like Space Bitches on Earth. I'm just worried that we'll have limited advertisers with a name like that.
Fair.
A thing with, like, the actual Play Podcast thing is that a couple of people basically just lucked into... Well, these aren't podcasts, but lucked into getting, like, the really easy names. Like, somebody actually managed to create, like, a actual play show called Actual Play. And I'm eternally mad at them for that.
I can understand why.
Anyways, we should probably start talking about the anime we are here to talk about.
Yeah, before our, like, one listener blasting Caramel Dawson through a sewer just gives up on us. You know who you are. I love you. Platonically.
Okay, so... Romeo x Juliet, episode 15. The Self. The Way Forward. We open on Romeo looking through a sack. Then we get a flashback to all the stuff that happened with Petruchio last episode. He finds three kind of like diamond-like rocks, and the most muscular of the slaves says that they were mementos for his brother and sister, that...
Actually, they're not slaves. They're prisoners. It's like that amendment we have.
But yeah, anyways, the tallest and most muscular of the slaves said that they were mementos for his brother and sister, and that they were everything he owned, and asks what he's going to do with it. Romeo tells him he'll be bringing it back to Petruchio's family, and asks how he can be so calm about the death of a child. The slave says, "I'll die here. Why should he be any different?" and walks away. We see Romeo failing to mine. He looks at his hands and wonders if there's ever been such a powerless hand.
There has been. And it was Petruchio's.
Oh, we have fun here. Anyways, the older miner...
Human tragedy. Aw, yeah.
The... older miner notices an oncoming cave-in, and everybody runs, but Romeo gets knocked over. The big miner sees that Romeo has just barely avoided the cave-in and tells him to beg his father for mercy, because if he stays here, he'll die. We cut to Neo Verona, where Lady Hermione has just arrived to adorn Romeo's room with roses. When she drops the flower, when she sees an iris already in the room, and collapses.
I think it's a very interesting character moment to show her, like, she looks like she's about to crush it and, like, tear up the flower, but she stops herself. And it's just a really great moment, and I think it's a really nice bit of foreshadowing for the next episode.
I think she tears one petal, but then stops herself from doing the rest.
Yes, and I have to say one thing. It seems like he couldn't handle that wet-ass iris.
Did you have to say that, or did you not? That is a question for the ages. So, meanwhile, we see Cerebin. Holy shit, remember him?
No.
Yeah, we'll forget about him after this scene again, because I don't think he ever shows up again. Ordering a house searched because he knows they have a redhead they're hiding. And Volio and Cordelia sees this. He has the door broken down and enters the room imperiously. He throws aside the sheet on the bed, and then he and his men look shocked. The house's mom and dad explain that their daughter was ill, and because they couldn't purchase medicine, she died the previous night. The mother asks how they could dishonor her memory like this. One guard steps back somewhat horrified, while Cerevin looks unconcerned, as you would expect. The father grabs him by the lapels and asks what they've done to this city, and notices like a plague has descended.
Can you believe that somebody could die by not getting medicine when a country or society has the means for that medicine but denies it towards its citizens?
That totally doesn't happen 4,500, is it 45,000 times a year?
I don't it's know a lot. The exact statistic.
It's a whole lot.
Yeah.
Also, they probably would have had the medicine if Lancelot hadn't been torched.
If Lancelot hadn't been torched, and if they... I don't know if the rationing is still happening at this point. It might have stopped after they got the Red Whirlwind. Anyways, Saruman tells him to stop talking or he'll join his daughter in death and then backhands him. Having scanned the room and seen that the family doesn't have a puppy he can kick, he leaves the house. Cordelia calls them out, and the Carabinieri decides to arrest her for criticizing them, showing that they are pretty realistic portrayals of police.
Yeah, because that never happens, right?
And I think this scene shows a really great thing about the fact that there is power in numbers. If everybody in that crowd turned against the three Carabinieri, they'd be overwhelmed.
Yep. Benvolio grabs her hand and they run. A middle-aged woman calls them in a direction, and we see the guards entering a rough bar. They demand to know where the fugitives are. The patrons say they aren't there. The guards try to intimidate them one more time. But then, like, a middle-aged lady comes out with a stick, and they suddenly decide that they aren't there and make a run for it.
Demonstrating the power of numbers.
Yeah.
Yes.
We see Benvolio and Cordelia hiding. He tells her she shouldn't take risks like that. She begins to explain how mad they made her, but then notices her hand in his and takes it back blushing. As he looks out to see if they're safe, she thanks him, but he doesn't hear her and she gets mad.
Showing that Benvolio is the Romeo in this relationship. I love it. With anybody else besides Romeo, Benvolio is like, she just has two brain cells at all times. With Romeo, he takes Romeo's one brain cell and gives himself three.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Romeo's like, here, have my one brain cell as a little treat.
I think it's also pretty funny that in a lot of shows like this, the main couple has, like, a lot of relationship drama, and then the secondary couple doesn't. Whereas in this show, it's the exact opposite, and where Romeo and Juliet have big obstacles, but their relationship it is, like, a one that they fall into very easily. Whereas in this one, the relationship is very much hindered by both people's personalities.
I think that's a very apt description.
Yeah.
It's fine. Benvolio's just not over the rough breakup with Romeo.
Yeah. Back at the mine, Romeo looks at the handkerchief, and some of the mine workers steal it and toss it between each other. These guys are all basically slave labor owned by him, and they still feel safe actively bullying him, which is funny.
I think that shows a lot about Romeo's character, actually.
Yeah, it does. Eventually, the handkerchief falls on the big miner's shoulder, and he returns it, telling the others to stop wasting time. The next day, we see some shots of the Capulet crew going about their day. Meanwhile, Juliet looks up at a big tree. Antonio asks what she's thinking about, and she mentions thinking about a great tree. Then we see several shots of Aeschylus as the ground begins to shake.
Don't you mean Tresus?
I'm sorry that I used the wrong name for our Lord and Savior, Tresus. Have you heard the good news of our Lord and Savior, Tresus?
He shall.
Tresus is love. Tresus is life.
Tresus shall keep you safe within his branches, and within his roots you shall remain strong. Yeah.
Remember, Tresus was turned into a crucifixion for our sins.
Tresus shall feed us all with the fruit from its branches.
So anyways, at the mines, the ground shakes, and we see Juliet on the ground breathing hard. Ophelia says, Our fair goddess, wrought to weep, her our gold across the lands, she folds her wings, perchance to sleep. Judgment quakes beneath the sand. We return to the mind. We see one of the miners, specifically one of the ones who bullied Romeo, has his leg crushed under a rock. Romeo goes to help him, but the big miner tells him to back off and single-handedly moves the rock himself. He promises to take care of the guy.
So what we see here is that, like, Romeo is absolutely still a himbo. There is just also the existence of this one giant muscle man.
The thing about this guy is that he is like a big dude by the standards of this show, and would still be considered a somewhat big dude by, you know, like real life standards. If this was a show where everybody was super muscular, he would not stand out as a person who is able to move a boulder on his own.
I'm still calling him Barabate, because that's what he is for this show.
Yes.
Yeah. Also, every time y'all call Romeo a himbo, I die a little inside.
It's an accurate description, and we're going to move on. Juliet wakes up surrounded by the others, who all look concerned. Curio asks how long she's been feeling ill. She says it only just came over her. Francisco suggests they stop to rest. At the mine, we see loads of injured people being cared for. Paulo looks on in horror and then gets mad as he sees the slaves caring for the wounded. He tells them to forget the wounded and just dig up the mine. When Romeo tells him the men come first, he says, excuse me, if they get the mine ready, they can hire new workers, but without it, they'll starve and incur the wrath of Prince Montague. He brings up the fact that Romeo needs a mine if he's going to go home. He begins yelling at the miners again, and when they don't get up, he tells two guards to get them up. Romeo announces they will abandon the mine, saying, "These prisoners have more than paid for their crimes. Every man here can return to Neo Verona a free man." Paulo calls him mad and says that the prince would never allow such a thing. Romeo reminds him he has full authority here and starts organizing the men to set up shelter and get bandages. Then he leads the others to find everyone else who's fallen.
And like, go Romeo.
Yeah.
Romeo, like, said prison abolition.
Yeah.
For real.
When Romeo asks who's left, the big miner says the only one left is Pietro. When they find out, he worked the northern tunnels, which were hit especially hard. Romeo runs off. The big miner says Pietro is already dead, but Romeo says he still has to try. Romeo arrives in the tunnel and finds that below, the guy who was the leader of the gang who took his handkerchief is stuck below. Pietro tells him his leg doesn't work and he should go find some help. Then half of the outcropping he's on collapses, and he just goes, "Damn, this looks bad."
Yeah, right?
Pietro is surprisingly casual about this whole thing for, like, a pretty long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It definitely gives me the vibe of someone who's, like, running off of adrenaline.
Yeah.
And just a little bit in shock.
Also, yeah. I just want to say this, the guy in charge of running the mine is really demonstrating modern corporate America and its belief in grinding down its workers into absolute paste for short-term benefits.
He is also demonstrating a thing that we don't talk about nearly enough, which is the concept of elite panic. Yeah. Behind the Bastards does a good episode on this, actually. Basically, a thing that's actually been looked at through research is that though there's some degree of, like, panic and stuff that goes through normal people in the cases of disasters, it's actually been demonstrated that normal people are actually, who don't have, like, a lot of power, are actually most likely to form up for like mutual aid and stuff, whereas elites and people who have like certain amounts of power are actually way more likely to panic and make the situation worse.
Wild, and that makes sense.
Yeah.
Also, just a real world little PSA, please be nice to people working in retail, customer service, or fast food or the food industry, because of COVID, people have gotten meaner and nastier. A lot of female servers, they've been doing studies. NPR did a really great article about it, about how sexual harassment has gone up by 40%.
Yeah.
And multiple women have been told to take off their masks, so because men that are tipping say they want to know if they're pretty or not, and basing their tip around that.
Oh, shit.
So, also just, if you are being treated poorly at your work, please call OSHA if you are in the United States. You deserve to at least have rubber mats if you're standing on a hard surface for hours at a time, to make sure your place is following COVID restrictions properly, given your state ordinances.
Yep.
And the CDC, and also just good luck out there, because corporate America is horrible and treats you all like garbage on purpose for short-term benefits without thinking about long-term investment of its employees' health and safety.
It really does. And so, it's absolutely wrong, and it needs to change, because honestly, we need better regulations, but that's...
We also need to eat the fucking rich.
Yes.
Yes. Also, we need to organize. Unionize. Yep. Unionize organization.
I mean, also, I could go for a Bezos Menon.
Well, we are never getting that Audible sponsorship.
Yeah, sorry, Audible. We want to eat your boss.
Also, just a...
And not in the fun way.
Oh, yep. My God.
We have to clarify that, because our podcast can get pretty horny already, so we have to make sure that people realize that when we say we want to eat the rich, we're not talking about in a sexual way, we're talking in a kill them and devour their corpses way.
Also, fun fact, there's a phenomenon called the sticky floor. So the glass ceiling, it's like women cannot advance due to sexism and the sex structure within corporations for higher end jobs, more white collar jobs. The opposite is called the sticky floor phenomenon, where it's very hard for women to advance within care or service industries that literally have sticky floors, because it's considered women's work to care for other people and to take care of them. So it's also a job that is degraded by society, because a lot of retail and customer service jobs are inhabited by women.
Right. So, yeah. So Romeo goes to climb down while Pietro tells him not to be stupid. The big miner, who we finally learn is named Giovanni, stops him and ties a rope to him to help him. Romeo ties himself to Pietro, and Giovanni pulls them up when Romeo falls. There is a massive hole leading to the clouds below.
I do have to point out that Romeo in this instance is basically like free climbing a cliff with another man on his back. And that is proof of the himboness.
Yeah, he's very strong.
Y'all are just trying to kill me through anger, aren't y'all?
That night, we see people caring for the sick. Romeo digs through the quarantine area as Giovanni brings him food. When asked what he's doing, Romeo says he's looking for Petruchio's things. He finds them under the rocks. Giovanni asks him what happens if they aren't allowed into the city. Romeo says they'll just have to find a new place to live, and pulls out the handkerchief. I made her a promise. I said I would make a world where we could be together. That world is not born by the bloody sacrifice of others. Giovanni chuckles and says, nothing to lofty dreams of children. Still, it sounds good. The other miners come by. Pietro awkwardly thanks him and apologizes for the handkerchief thing. He pulls out a little ring he carries like a necklace and says it's like a cheaper version of what Romeo has. He invites Romeo to dinner with the others. Giovanni thinks, the far shores you set sail for can only be reached after labors beyond your darkest fears. Godspeed, Romeo. That is the episode. Do thing. We have a new end theme now.
Yeah, that was wild. I like the old one better.
Same.
I like the old one better, but I like this one. But I think this one is relatively pretty.
It is pretty.
And it has some great little animation of, you know, the Red Whirlwind's hat and the cape billowing the wind. That looks really great.
Yeah, I mean, I am prepared to say that having watched this series before, I was surprised by how quickly I remembered Sayonara yesterday. I'd kind of remembered that the original theme ripped. I didn't really remember much about this one other than it was different, but when they started saying Sayonara yesterday, that did bring back memories. But yeah, it's very funny that they decided to change the end theme, but not the beginning theme, because they knew that they'd struck gold with that. One of the only other times I've seen something sort of similar for that is in G Gundam, where they had a really rocking beginning theme, and when the plot had changed to the point where they need to change stuff, they changed a lot of the images in the theme song, but they didn't change the actual song.
Because the song was just too good.
Yeah. Anyways.
So they probably paid for the rights of You Lift Me Up. Like, they paid for that. They're not going to put that money away.
Yeah. So the episode preview for A Change is done by Lady Hermione, and we'll be seeing more episode previews done by different characters than William from here on out. Yeah, so her line is, "Pining eyes whose tears I must forbid, my maker hopes a scented sister kiss, but all be bared, lest dreams of love be rid. And judge me not if I have done amiss." The catchphrase is changed to, "Is this truly a feeling that will be forever unrequited?" The answer is yes.
Yeah. It is. It really is. She's got to learn to deal with it. I'm sorry.
So
Lady Hermione, get away from him.
So we're going to talk about this episode. Before we go on to the next.
The first thing I want to say. Okay. My kink is legitimately decent people, and Romeo fulfills that.
Yeah. He is a very nice boy.
He is a good boy. He kind of going, but he's also just a very dumb.
He may not know his potatoes from his rocks, yeah, but he knows human rights.
Yeah.
Yes, he's like a Labrador in that way.
He's not the brightest in regards to how things work in the world.
Yeah, he has definitely not heard the call to agriculture. God damn it.
Fuck. Agriculture.
Yes.
He has not heard the call of agriculture.
Yes.
He is like me, a college student graduate. He may have non-real world knowledge and application to that knowledge. And he may know all theories and all sorts of really cool smart stuff, but how to fix something or how to cook? Question mark.
Okay, yeah. Elizabeth, that's Romeo. True, but I'm pretty sure you know what a potato looks like.
I love potatoes.
Yeah, potatoes are amazing.
If Romeo was in real life, he'd be the real life version of the dumb of ass and fat of ass meme.
He's dumb, but he's also very, he has a strong sense of right and wrong, and that's cool too.
I bet Romeo understands, like, complicated theories about economics, but he doesn't understand, like, real day-to-day life.
I'm not sure that Romeo knows economic theory too well.
I'm pretty certain he doesn't understand economics because of trading the thing for food.
Yeah, as someone who studies economics, Romeo doesn't seem that smart in economics.
Just because, you know, royal heir, you know, he probably has had some tutoring.
He's
he probably has.
He said some tutoring. I'm not sure if economic theory was a thing he was tutored in.
He got tutored in having a thick ass.
He does seem to understand, like, not so much economic theory, but, like, social structures.
Yeah, he does understand that. And, like, there's that part in the, like, I think first episode, actually. Either that or the second, when he was explaining how he got into that thing where he saved Juliet the first time. He was explaining that he thought that he should, like, live amongst the people a little bit so that he could understand them. And his dad was like, what? No, they just need to fear you.
Romeo is smarter than his dad in a lot of ways.
I mean, his dad understands a certain theory of rulership that was very common in the time that this series takes place.
His dad has read Machiavelli.
Yeah.
And was like, my god, this is the greatest thing ever, not realizing Machiavelli was like, so this is the worst thing ever?
He read Machiavelli and he went, soft.
Yeah.
He read Machiavelli and didn't understand it.
He would keep copies of Ayn Rand all over his house, you know it.
No, I think Lord Montague would have better taste than Ayn Rand.
The thing is that Ayn Rand's economic theories would not make sense to anybody who lives in this era.
True. But the social attitude of, like, hoard everything, the powerful must rule the weak, I think he would dig that. He'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't mind the fact that it's a woman speaking for, like, 5 minutes. Okay, that's my limit.
Yeah. I don't think he has any particular dislike of women. I just think that his wife is smart.
Hey, I just had a terrible thought.
What?
So we agree Romeo has a thick ass, right?
I think he got it from his mom's side, Coley.
Is Romeo's mom a MILF?
Did Romeo get it from Papa Montague? If we saw a Papa Montague in a speedo, would he just have a dumb truck ass?
I think...
fucking hope not.
See, like, a flashback to back when Papa Montague wasn't evil, he used to be hot?
Yes, actually.
Oh, wow.
I mean, not hot hot, but he was, like, not a bad-looking guy.
He was serviceable.
Yeah. We've actually seen what he looked like when he was younger, and, like, by Venetian standards, he would be, like, a conventionally attractive man.
Also, I don't want to think about Lord Montague having, like, a nice ass in the way he currently looks, because he looks like Ivan the fucking Terrible.
Did Ivan the Terrible have a dump truck ass?
How many
questions?
Hold on, let me check something. I want to check something.
Are you going to Google it? Because your Google history is going to be destroyed in, like, 5 seconds. Zeb tanking.
What have I done?
His Google search history for the pod. For the pod.
Okay. I'm gonna say I don't know if he had a thick ass, but and I know that the, like, paintings were, like, usually kind of idealized. Young Ivan the Terrible probably isn't hot by today's standards, but by the standards of the time, he was pretty conventionally attractive.
He would have been a fuck machine.
Oh, damn. Okay, actually.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable when this happens, right?
Oh, he's cute. He looks like a hipster at a cafe.
Yeah.
He does.
Like, he all right.
Looks like...
He's cute in a ferret way.
It's like how, you know, I acknowledge the fact that Stalin was a horrible person and stuff, but I've seen pictures of him young, and I'd let him do whatever he wanted with me at that point. Like,
oh my god, yeah!
I mean, this picture that you sent of young Ivan the Terrible, god, that's a statement.
No, anyway. I'm being honest. Let me show you a picture. Come on, just a sec.
Oh no!
I'm scared for all of us.
He looks good. I can't help it. Like,
actually, I see what you're saying. Oh my god,
he looks like an Instagrammer.
He does. Wow.
See, you know what I'm talking about.
Okay, so side note, Jenny, for those who don't know, Jenny is my girlfriend. Jenny, I recently asked to draw me a picture of a thirst trap cat boy because reasons that are...
I know the exact reasons why.
You know the exact reasons. Anyway, I asked Jenny to draw me a thirst trap cat boy. This picture of Stalin you sent me actually looks like the thirst trap cat boy's face.
Oh wow.
Can we title
except the thirst trap cat boy has glasses.
Okay, we're already getting to end of episode energy. We need to save some of that for the actual end of the episode. Say we should go to the next.
We should, but we should also take a 10-minute break.
Right, we're ready to rock and roll.
Yeah.
Okay, so Romeo and Juliet, episode 16. One person, so dear. At Castle Montague, Lady Hermione finds Mercutio. He says he's busy and only has a moment. She asks if the news of the cave-in is true. He says they are pretty common. When she asks about Romeo, he says they're still looking into the matter, but Prince Montague has had word that Romeo is fine. She asks him to petition the prince to bring Romeo back. Mercutio says the die is cast. He says he would never have done what he did if it weren't for Juliet. He smirks and wonders if Juliet will go to the mine to find him. Hermione says she'll go to Giudicia herself first, seemingly surprising Mercutio. He allows her to go to a nearby town to find a coach. As she runs off, he smirks and thinks, now that Romeo's fallen from grace, your simpering serves me no purpose. Good riddance.
He doesn't actually tell her which town to go to. He says, go to the nearby town. There's more than one. We've established there's more than one.
Maybe Neo Verona is just on one side of the floating island thing that they have going on, and everywhere else is and so it's sequential or something.
I always forget it's a floating island.
Yeah, or maybe this is just a thing in fantasy series where they don't want to go into super amounts of detail every time they talk about towns.
That's fair.
I'm just reminded all of a sudden of some insane fan theory that the Jetsons and the Flintstones take place in the same world at the same time, and that the super high up cities is just where the Jetsons live, and the bottom ground is the Flintstones. Now I'm just imagining that for Neo Verona.
Well, that can't be true. There was already a time travel crossover between the two, right?
I think so.
There was.
The Hanna-Barbera canon is very strange.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is.
Anyways,
I have an example of how strange the Hanna-Barbera canon is. And it's not the fucking Fonzie Doctor Who show.
Is it the Charlie Chang and the Chan clan?
No, but that one's also weird. So there was a show called Barney and Fred Meet the Thing, which is not about Barney and Fred meeting the Thing, but it was partially about the Fantastic Four's Thing. But you see, the show was about Ben Grimm, who had been apparently turned into a teenager, who he was now human again, but now had magic rings that turned him into his fame form. And it is a legitimately bizarre show.
Huh.
So that means that both Batman and The Thing are canon in Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah, everything's canon with Hanna-Barbera. Every thought we have about Hanna-Barbera is canon.
Also, I got that show name wrong. It's apparently The Amazing Chan and The Amazing Chan Clan. Very weird Hanna-Barbera. Like, Hanna-Barbera, Hanna-Barbera had also lots of weird other shows people don't know about, like The Funky Phantom, Inch High, Private Eye, just very weird. We can probably do a Patreon episode all about the weird Hanna-Barbera shows that were like 12 minutes long.
Yeah. All right. So Juliet and the others ride along in their carriage. Francisco mentions that the villa will be a good hiding place, and that many villas see little use because Montague keeps the other nobles close so that they can't rebel. Juliet smiles and thinks, "I'll gaze into your eyes again, Romeo. The heart that's e'er kept time in my breast belongs to you." Francisco smirks and thinks, "Even a golem would ache for her." As Juliet pines, Antonio brings a cricket and asks if she misses Romeo. She says she does, but understands why they can't be together. He emphasizes, but distracts her with funny cricket voices.
Antonio is such a sweet boy.
Yeah.
Should be applied to going and becoming a superhero and also catching crickets and making people laugh about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The quote, "We are the union, boys should be girls and girls should be boys."
Meanwhile, Francisco tells Curio, "If you charged into love as you do into battle, her heart would be spoken for ere she ever laid eyes on Montague's son." Curio is defensive, and after a while they start fighting while Juliet and Antonio look on confused. Francisco says he'll drive now and tells Curio, "Wrestle the demons in your own heart."
So I was a little confused this episode. Was he messing with Curio? Did he think Curio was in love with Juliet and didn't realize it and he had jealousy issues? Or was he just kind of being like, "Hey Curio, forget, just get over your emotional constipation and let me talk." What was the
I don't know. I think there's some implication, at least, in this episode that Curio is supposed to have some feelings for Juliet. But as I recall, I haven't watched ahead, they don't really follow up on this that much. Like, they don't really follow, similarly to how they don't really follow up on most of the other characters who are positioned as possible rivals for Juliet's affection, because, you know, like, most people know what's going to happen. But, like, also, Curio does still remain, like, having more chemistry with Francisco than he does with anyone else.
For sure.
Can I just tell you something? I just call them Faye and Kuroganay in my head, because they're basically just Faye and Kuroganay.
Yeah, I mean, that's their fan nickname.
Also, whenever I look at them, I'm just reminded of the early 2000s American anime fandom obsession of everything being Ook and Semi. And I'm like, oh my god, Top and Bottom has replaced that. It's just a new version of that.
Yeah,
it literally is. Isn't it basically just literally Top and Bottom?
Yeah.
If we're getting into the weird shipping thing, I think the only one in this show that I would be okay with getting, like, Juliet's affections that isn't Romeo is Benvolio. And now I'm just imagining
Hermione.
That I'm not going to say Hermione because of what happens in this episode that we haven't gotten to.
Valid.
There are people who ship Juliet and Hermione.
That doesn't surprise me. But yeah, no, the only one other than Romeo I'd be okay with is Benvolio. And now I'm imagining Romeo, Benvolio, and Juliet in a nice little polycule.
Yeah.
In the countryside.
I could imagine her having, like, not like a long-term relationship, but like a brief for fun relationship with Amelia. But that's about it.
Amelia always wants her dressed up as Odin, and she wants to do both.
Yeah, like, Amelia definitely just has a crush on her as Odin. And I don't know if that's necessarily true, because we do forget that Amelia was the first person who dressed Juliet up as Juliet in this show, and her reaction to seeing Juliet as Juliet was basically still hot. So, alright, so at the castle, Prince Montague asks Mercutio what he sees when he looks at his father. Mercutio answers, "What do I see, my lord?" Philodemon devotion steps out of reach for one such as him. When asked why, he says, "His knowledge is like a great harvest left to rot in the field. He chortles at forgotten yesterdays, besotten with drink. In a sense, he's already dead." Prince Montague shocks him by asking him, "Do you perceive him as dead, or wish it so?" Before Mercutio can answer, Hermione's parents show up, panicked that she dismissed the valet and went off on her own. Mercutio looks genuinely shocked. As they come to the town, Kirio and Antonio go off to reconnoiter. Francisco asks Julia if Kirio said anything to her, and she says he just slept, and Francisco calls him a coward. Julia understandably looks confused because she has no context for this. Kirio notices wilted roses everywhere. When they return, Antonio mentions the accident. Francisco comforts Juliet by saying that if Romeo had died, they'd hear about it because even more people would be executed. He adds, "If you must weep for anyone, weep for Neo Verona." The group hurries to the villa. At the villa, they find more dried roses. A very cool but also extremely stereotypical butler named Balthazar greets them. His granddaughter, Reagan, helps carry stuff from the wagon. Antonio asks if she needs help, but she dismisses him.
Friendship denied. Disdain is only what you receive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Side note. I actually really like Reagan.
And I like how she has like a simple but clean design. Like she's not overly frilly or just kind of like generically cute. She's like, she is cute, but she's not like generically moe, big-eyed cute.
Yeah. So Lady Hermione gets robbed by some bandits, including one with a very strange, vaguely New York sounding accent.
Yeah, what are you talking about? We're going to steal your dragon, Pegasus, all right? Get out of here.
Hey, I'm robbing a carriage here.
Hey, get out of here, don't you know? Wow.
I don't know what the fuck that was. I'm sorry.
You know what? That was basically Hermione's response to being robbed. She's like, what? What?
Yeah. So she thinks about how none of this would have happened if not for Juliet. Balthazar gives a tour. When Kirio asks about the roses, he says, as if it was the most simple thing of the imaginable, that they are on the Montague family crest. He asks if Juliet is ill. When she says she's fine, he allows her to take her leave. She goes to the garden. Francisco tells Kirio, "Her love, it winds like the river Styx into oblivion. It's hopeless. Go. Go, warrior, besiege her heart." Kirio gets mad and says, "Who made you general?"
That's fair, actually.
Yeah.
Like, in this situation, she clearly has this thing for this other guy. She's clearly set on that. And, like, Kirio's, like, has, like, a vague crush, maybe. Like, yeah, it stings a bit, but he's being, like, a decent person.
I mean, I think that Francisco isn't necessarily interested in Kirio being in a relationship with Juliet. I think he's interested in Juliet not being in a relationship with their family's enemy.
That makes sense.
I think Francisco even is kind of like, listen, even if you did attempt to like woo her, even if you did think you captured her heart years before she even met Romeo, like she still would have picked him. Like, if he came along, like, she still would have been like, this. Yeah. Like, she would be like, this is nice, but I like Romeo.
Yeah. So, the Lady Hermione tells a wagon to stop in the name of love. I want everybody who is about to make a joke to remember copyright law.
I thought we were good if we didn't go over 30 seconds.
Yeah. Just so. If anybody, I'm just saying that if anybody starts singing as a joke, just make sure it's only 30 seconds.
Stop.
Actually, we're good for much longer than that because what we're doing falls distinctly under fair use because of commentary.
Yeah.
Stop.
In the name of love.
Right.
Stop. In the name of love.
That's the only thing I know of. I don't know any other lyrics. I just know that little chorus.
Yeah.
Before you break my heart, I think.
That is part of it, yeah. Anyways, she hacks, asks how to get to the mine. When she tries to get on, he says that he's not going to the mine. He's going to the area that that Juliet is in. When she tries to get on, he says she needs to pay. She protests that she has no money, so he's about to leave, but she offers a diamond ring, and he changes his tune. Curio sees Juliet praying, talking about Romeo. She sees Reagan and asks to go along shopping with her. Curio comes along as well as protection. As all the food is dried up and expensive, Reagan says it's gotten worse. Curio notes that if people liked Montague, the roses would be replaced. The group sees a girl collapse, and Juliet runs to help her. It's Hermione, of course. Hermione screams and runs and then attacks with a rock. Curio stops her. She yells to Juliet that every day she exists is like a dagger in her heart and demands to know why she didn't perish with her family. She declares that she hates her and collapses.
Remember I said how last episode of the podcast that I liked how they didn't make Hermione insane and jealous?
Now Hermione's insane and jealous.
I'm just going to say this. Hermione is on the path to Yondaire.
I think that in this episode she was past the path, honestly.
Well, I was thinking about that as well, but then I realized something, and that is in that episode and this one, Romeo was sent away, was basically exiled. I feel like that may be playing a role in Hermione's change of behavior.
I mean, a thing I'll say also is that Hermione has actually been expressed resentment for Juliet several times before. She just hasn't actually acted on it.
Right. It's just such a big jump from saying, like, I'm really upset about this to, like, because honestly, yes, she is very scared that Romeo might be dead or seriously hurt, and she doesn't trust Mercutio, which, to be fair, nobody does, so.
No, she trusts Mercutio. She's never expressed anything but trust for Mercutio so far.
Weird. All right, my mistake, but, It was a very big jump. I kind of liked how it showed how Hermione has lived a very privileged life. She doesn't, unlike Romeo, who doesn't know his rocks from his potatoes, she's like, I don't have any money. What about love? And this guy's like, yeah, no, love don't put food on the table now, does it?
Love doesn't give me any potatoes.
Love doesn't give me potatoes.
And Hermione's response to that is, what's a potato? Because apparently this is a normal thing for nobles.
Maybe potatoes are considered, like, poor people food?
I think the real thing is probably that they've only seen potatoes after they've been cut up and cooked.
That checks out.
Anyways, at the estate, they've set up Hermione with a nice bread. Curio says, mercy on her is wasted. When Juliet expresses sympathy, Antonio reminds her of the rock, and Curio confirms she'd do real harm if they let her. Juliet promises to clean her up. When Lady Hermione wakes up, Juliet says that she should be fine. Hermione finds a little knife and goes to stab Juliet, who catches it with her hand. Juliet tells her, Hermione, the hurt you do to me pales to the hurt you do herself. When asked if she knows what it's like to spill another's blood, Juliet says, My soul still bears the crimson stain. Juliet says she's glad to have met Hermione, since they care for the same man. In a sense, their hearts beat in unison. Hermione denies it and says she was going to see Romeo. Juliet begs to know if Romeo was alive. Hermione tells her that Romeo was alive and is shocked to see Juliet's happy face. Juliet thanks Hermione while crying. Hermione thinks, "My enemy bedews my feet with tears of solace. I have inspired. How came this contrary moment to pass?" She says, "I can't hate you anymore, and that's the most unkindest cut of all." So the next morning, everyone is gathered around the table as Hermione arrives. They invite her to join, but she refuses and demands a fancy carriage and a nice lunch and complains about being in such a backwater. Antonio says they should have left her on the road to die, which is a bit of an escalation, but not as much of an escalation as what Francisco asked, which is, well, do we send her home or onto her final reward?
Which is damn Francisco. Jesus fuck, man. What the actual fuck?
If it was a different person, it would actually be pretty dangerous to let her go knowing where they are. Anyways.
Like if it were Solomon, who we will never see again.
Solomon? I'm pretty sure there's not a character in this named Solomon.
Who am I thinking of?
I think you're thinking of Camillo.
Is Camillo the one that's voiced by Vegeta's?
No, you're thinking of Saruman.
I'm thinking of Saruman. I called him Solomon.
Anyways, Juliet makes it clear that Lady Hermione is an honored guest and should be sent back in all comfort and safety. As she leaves, Hermione says that no one must know of her visit, and she says that it's so Romeo doesn't think her unladylike, but actually it's pretty clear that she's promising not to be a snitch in a, for her, unusually tsundere way. So we see Titus preparing his morning wine. Mercutio comes in and bids him good morning. Titus notes he almost never sees him and asks if he's fallen out of favor. Mercutio says, "No, truly," and thinks about what Prince Montague said. He looks conflicted. So this time, the episode preview is courtesy of Tybalt. "The blade of enmity that cures all ills is thither sent by eyes the hatred hones. His anguish is the reason that he kills. His empty heart doth rattle against his bones." And yeah, we'll be getting an origin episode for Prince Montague next week.
I'm really excited for that. I just want to add a couple jokes in. First of all, Tybalt seeing his father drinking his morning wine should have said, "Oh, great, you're starting this at 8 a.m. just keep it up, Dad. Love you. So not embarrassed by you."
I mean, Mercutio is trying to be sincere with his dad because he feels conflicted because his boss just randomly offered to murder his father for him.
He's like, I'm going to think about that for a couple days. You have to think about not killing somebody? That says a lot about your relationship.
It does.
I mean, Mercutio was like shocked by the question, and then the question kind of just never came up again because they got interrupted by Hermione's family.
Also, I'm just going to say this, Hermione, I wish she had like a best friend character like Benvolio that would go, "What you need to do is go cut your hair, go to the salon, get your hair cut, do something crazy, you know, go out for a few days, relax, get a mud mask, think about life and stuff."
I kind of want to see Lady Hermione and Benvolio as like friends.
Yeah.
I'm I really liked this episode. I thought it was really interesting. It was great to see other sides of Hermione. It really humanized her.
Yeah.
And though it does frustrate me a little bit because it doesn't explain why she loves Romeo other than, like, he was her, like, was it? It was her befated mate or something like that. Like, I'm sure Romeo is nice. He's cute. He's got a nice little design. He's nice. But, like, he wasn't really giving Lady Hermione a lot to work with.
I think she had a crush on him before they were being set up. Because she's already, like, blushing and shit when Prince Montague tries to unsubtly set them up in the first episode.
I also think a big part of it is that she feels some level of ownership over Romeo because of their betrothal. And when Juliet comes in, Juliet is, like, taking that from her in her mind. And I don't think it has as much to do with actual love as she thinks it does. I think it has to do with her own, like...
Entitlement?
Entitlement, yeah. Her own entitlement and privilege.
I could see that. Which I think is a great realistic flaw to give a character like her.
I know that, like, there's serious reasons why Mercutio is not being more savage to his dad. But for a second... I really just want to come up with savage, like, burns toward his dad, if that's okay.
Yeah, do it.
The sun has barely risen, and you are already seeking to put yourself back in bed.
Oh, Father, do keep drinking. It really rises the Mercutio family name when you lose yourself in a bottle. 'Tis a wonder why you never remarried, Father. Why, after Mother's death, the way you threw yourself into the open arms of a winery surely must charm some half-brained widow.
For a moment, I thought that one of the dogs might have pissed in the house, but that is just the stench of your drunken state.
Mercutio just being done with his dad.
Yeah, he's not as savage as we're being right now, but, like, you know.
Yeah.
So... what about predictions? Because I have some predictions for the next few episodes that I'm really excited to talk about.
All right, let's hear them.
So we definitely saw vines outside the mine in episode 15.
Yeah.
They looked like tree roots. And then Juliet had that painful attack thinking about Tresus and the mine started collapsing. I think the longer that the Capulets are not in power, or at least somebody righteous is not in power in Verona, Neo Verona, that nature is slowly rebelling and that the structure of the city and the country and the nature itself is eroding because of it. I think it's also partially why we have the water dried up in the countryside in episode 16 and why it's very hard for vegetables and plants to grow and why they're drying up and withering because Tresus is mad.
Zeb's not saying anything, so I think you're probably right on the money.
Tresus also needs to stop hogging all the water because Tresus is hogging all the water.
Tresus is hugging all the water and it's kind of a problem. Tresus, get out of the shower.
Tresus is being problematic.
Any other predictions?
We're going to make a Tresus pamphlet, religious pamphlet at one point. It's going to be merchandise.
I could ask Kenzie if she wants to do that.
Hell yeah.
Be like, hey Kenzie, do you want to design a fake religious pamphlet for a fake religion that doesn't exist in an anime?
Our Saint Romeo, thick of ass, dumb of heart.
Right, so any other predictions?
Not a prediction so much, but what I want to see happen is I want to see Romeo, like, lead these prisoners or former prisoners right up to Montague's gate and just, like, armed rebellion. I want to see Romeo knock his dad's shit in.
I want to see Romeo's Pegadragon and the wild mare that they helped rescue come back in the final battle and be like their war horses.
Yes.
see the glorious dragons steed eat humans.
They gotta eat humans. They, like, because I'm assuming because they're so big.
I mean, there are other. There are other.
They probably don't actually eat humans, but I love the horrifying image of a flying horse swooping out of the sky and just picking someone off.
I just imagine it unhinges his jaw back like a snake. Snake. Like, watch some SoundCloud rappers sample that horrible noise I made and do a hit. Someone's gonna do it. You're desperate for a sample. Lydia's gonna be a SoundCloud rapper.
I mean, why not?
Any other
Seb wants to just be done with
us. Seb, you sound so tired.
Any other predictions?
I predict that Romeo is going to kill, Papa Montague, and Mercutio is going to kill his dad.
That'd be a lot of filicide.
Yeah, a lot of father murder going around. Yeah, filicide is the murder of one's children.
Patricide is what we're looking for here.
Yeah, I was thinking. I was like, yeah, it's patricide.
Like patriarchy.
Exactly.
Smash the patriarchy.
Kill your father.
With your girlfriend, it's relationship goals.
This is the second time that's come up. Hot new relationship trend.
Because if we're doing Supernatural for our next anime, kill your dad jokes are going to be a common staple.
They really will.
His Father's Day gift. The sweet release of death.
This may be a love that can never be, but our love for this anime and not the hosts is not.
What are you talking about? I love the hosts.
Aw, thank you.
I am Zeb Berryman. This has been Anime's Journey to the West. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at Anime's Journey TW, as well as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This may be a love that can never be, but our love for this anime is not.